Welcome to ID the Future, a podcast about intelligent design and evolution.
Welcome to ID the Future. This is Sarah Chaffee. Recently, there was a fascinating article on Evolution News by Dr. Michael Egnor entitled "The Universe Reflects a Mind." Today, we're going to catch up with Dr. Egnor about his article. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Dr. Egnor is professor of neurosurgery and director of pediatric neurosurgery at Stony Brook Medical School. He was named one of New York's best doctors in 2005 by New York Magazine and has been a scientific advisor to the Hydrocephalus Association of the United States. Egnor came to doubt Darwinian theory after reading Michael Denton's Evolution, A Theory in Crisis. Dr. Egnor, your article is entitled "The Universe Reflects a Mind" and addresses a concept called cosmopsychism. How would you define the idea of cosmopsychism?
Well, cosmopsychism is a way of making sense of the extraordinary fine-tuning of the universe. The article that I have been referring to was written by a professor of philosophy named Philip Goff, and who's a professor in Budapest. And he writes a fascinating article in which he points out that the values of the fundamental constants of physics in the universe are so precisely tuned to allow life to exist that the only way that one can make sense of those values is to suppose that there's a mind that gives rise to them, that it seems to be deliberate in a sense, that the strong nuclear force, the charge on the electron, the force of gravity are all so precisely tuned that life becomes possible. It really implies that there's a mind that makes things work like that. And he then asked the question, how do we understand that? Like, where could this phenomenon come from? He says that there are three different ways of explaining how it is that the universe could be so precisely tuned to give rise to life. One is the theistic idea, that is the idea that there's a God that gives rise to life. The other is the multiverse theory. And the third is his theory, which he calls agent of cosmopsychism. The theistic idea, which of course is the classical way of looking at the universe, that God created the universe, and that the universe is a reflection of God's mind. He rejects that theory because of the problem of evil. And I think he's mistaken about that. But the second theory that he brings forth is the multiverse theory. And he rejects the multiverse theory also. The multiverse theory says that there are many, many different universes, an uncountably large number of universes, and that the reason that life arose in our universe, the reason that our universe seems so fine-tuned, is simply because there were so many different universes that one of them was bound to be fine-tuned, and that's the one that we're in, because we wouldn't know it if we weren't in it. He rejects that because of a problem called the Boltzmann brain phenomenon. And the Boltzmann brain phenomenon is a thought problem that is based on the work of a physicist named Boltzmann, who worked in the late 19th century, who worked on statistical mechanics, on the statistical understanding of the motion of atoms. And Boltzmann had a lot to do with our modern concepts of entropy, of order and disorder in the universe. And the Boltzmann brain phenomenon says that it is much more likely, if our universe is simply something by chance, that the only thing that exists is my brain, the brain of the person contemplating this, and that because a single brain is so much simpler than the universe itself, that a single brain is much more likely to come into existence by chance than the universe itself. And that single brain simply may be deluded and may be mistaken in thinking that there's a universe, that really the only thing that exists is my own brain and my delusion that the rest of the universe exists. And the Boltzmann brain concept says that that's much more likely than the actual existence of the universe. So Goff correctly thinks that that really makes the multiverse theory untenable, because if indeed this whole thing is just by chance, then the Boltzmann brain idea is much more likely, and that's just ridiculous. Obviously, the universe does exist, and we're not just brains floating in a void. So he feels that theism doesn't work as an explanation of the fine-tuning because he doesn't accept the problem of evil. He thinks the multiverse theory doesn't work because he feels the Boltzmann brain hypothesis makes that untenable. So he proposes instead that the universe itself has a mind, and that the reason that the universe appears so precisely tuned to the development of life is that, in a sense, it intends to, that the universe has intentions and purposes. And he breaks up this idea of psychism into different categories. For example, there's a notion of panpsychism, that sort of everything has a mind, that every little speck of dust has a mind, that every atom has a mind, that every galaxy has a mind. And he doesn't think that's a particularly viable way of looking at things. That was sort of was Spinoza's idea of that a mind was everywhere. But Goff thinks that the mind only exists in the universe as a whole, or at least that's the only way that we can explain the fine-tuning. He thinks that the universe as a complete entity has a mind of sorts, and that mind actually is directed towards the good, towards achieving goodness in the universe, which he thinks is life. And that particular concept, that goodness is the goal of the universe, is called axiarchism. And that's another theory. And he feels that if you mix cosmopsychism, the idea that the universe as a whole has a mind, and axiarchism, that the universe is working towards something good, that you get what he calls agentive cosmopsychism, which is his theory. That the universe is conscious, the universe deliberately intends to create good things, and we are that creation.
That's kind of an interesting idea that the universe would, you know, tend to good. But his overall idea sounds sort of spiritualistic and sort of the yoga-like take.
Right. It has a sort of a Buddhist way of looking at things. I do give him credit for avoiding some of the crude materialist ways of understanding the universe. I mean, clearly he's thought a great deal about this, and you can't say that about the materialists for the most part. So that it is a thoughtful idea, and I agree with him in two things. That is, that there is manifest in the universe qualities that we would ascribe to a mind. That is, that the various physical laws and physical processes in the universe certainly seem to be directed at things. They're teleological. You know, they follow very precise mathematical laws. There really is fine tuning. It really does exist. And so it's not entirely crazy to say that the universe in some way reflects a mind. And in fact, I think that's the only rational thing that one can say. But the question, I think, is in what way is the mind manifest in the universe? That is the universe itself a mind, or is there a mind that stands outside of the universe that is reflected in it? And I believe that the view that there's a mind outside of the universe that is reflected in the universe is by far the more rational view.
And why do you think that the universe isn't a mind, but instead reflects a mind?
Sure. Well, one of the aspects of Goff's theory is Goff believes, he doesn't believe in God. He believes that the ground of existence, the fundamental thing that exists, is a universe which has a mind. The problem with that viewpoint is that the classical philosophers, particularly the scholastic philosophers, but this goes all the way back to Aristotle, have demonstrated, I think, in very rigorous arguments, that the fundamental thing that exists cannot be the universe, cannot be the material universe. And there are a whole bunch of different, very powerful demonstrations of that argument. Two of them, I think, are worth discussing. One is something that's been called the Thomistic argument. And it's not one of St. Thomas's famous five ways, but it was discussed in another of St. Thomas's works on being in essence. And the Thomistic argument says that there is a distinction between what something is and that something is. That is, that there's a distinction between something's essence, a description of it, and the fact that it exists. For example, I could describe right now the universe in great detail. I could tell you where all the galaxies are. I could tell you all the different stars and all the different properties of things, or, you know, at least in theory. But you wouldn't know from my description, no matter how much detail I get into, whether that actually was the way the universe was. That is, I could say that there's a galaxy that is, you know, 10 light years across, located the north-northeast of the Andromeda Galaxy. And unless you were an astronomer, you wouldn't know whether that galaxy really existed or not. So there is a distinction between the ability to describe something, which you can describe in great detail, and the fact as to whether it exists or not. And that distinction means that the material universe has to have its existence kind of added to it, because the material universe doesn't, there's nothing about the material universe itself that includes its own existence as a necessary fact. That is, it might be that a particular thing about the universe is or is not. But whatever is the ground of existence, wherever existence comes from, by necessity has to have existence as its essence. And as St. Thomas said, the ground of existence is that which its essence is existence, and that's God. But God, in that sense, the ground of existence, can't be the universe itself. It has to be something outside of the universe. It has to be something that gives to the universe its existence. So that's called the Thomistic proof. And I think it's a very powerful argument. It's a bit subtle and a bit hard to grasp at times, but it's a very powerful argument. The other argument is the prime mover argument, which was first proposed by Aristotle. And it has been proposed by a number of other philosophers, including St. Thomas. And it was St. Thomas's first way. And that's the argument that whatever the ground of existence, whatever the fundamentally existing thing is, it has to be something that is completely actual, that has no what the classics even call potency. That is, it has no possibilities in it. It is fully actual, fully real. And the universe is not fully actual. That is, the universe can change. It has contingencies. A star can grow cooler, or a cloud of gas can condense or disperse, and things like that can happen. And what that means is that the universe is not fully actual. It contains potentialities. By containing potentialities, it can't itself be the origin of existence, because the actualization of potentialities requires something actual to make it happen. So it's a kind of an infinite regress argument. So those two arguments alone, really the Thomistic argument and the prime mover argument, make it untenable that the universe itself could be the ground of existence. The only rational way of understanding this mind that's reflected in the universe is that there is a mind that is beyond the universe, that manifests itself in the laws of nature. And that, of course, is the classical theist argument, which is the one that I believe makes the most sense.
Interesting. So looking at what we've seen about these two arguments, you mentioned that Goff talks about fine-tuning of the universe, and he brings up some of the statistics, talking about gravity, talking about the nuclear force. Do you think that Goff is simply trying to rationalize away the evidence for design? And how does this conversation relate to the idea of intelligent design?
Well, I certainly think that I give Goff quite a bit of credit. I don't agree with his conclusion, but clearly he's thought about the problem in great detail, and he has the intellectual courage to face up to the problem. And it really is a problem, from the classical materialist standpoint. That is, that there is enormous fine-tuning of very slight changes in the value of the strong nuclear force, even to like one part in 10,000, or very slight changes in the charge on the electron, or very slight changes in gravity, would be enough to make life impossible. Lee Smolin, who is a cosmologist who is an atheist, has estimated that the chance of life emerging in the universe just by chance, without any kind of direction, is less than 1 in 10 to the 229th power, which is an unfathomably small chance. So even Smolin, who is not a theist, says that we have to explain this. This is not something that can just happen by chance. And I believe that Goff realizes that the multiverse theory, which is the theory now that materialists primarily have used to try to explain this astonishing fine-tuning, the multiverse theory is not a tenable explanation because of the Boltzmann brain problem that we talked about before. And there are many other problems with the multiverse theory. First of all, there's no evidence for multiverses. It's unclear why one would think that proposing that there are an essentially infinite number of other universes that are being created every moment by every physical process in every subatomic particle in the universe is a simpler or more plausible explanation than simply saying that God created the universe. And I don't believe personally that one can meaningfully talk about probabilities between universes. That is, the multiverse theory is a way of explaining away the improbability of the arising of a fine-tuned universe. But each universe, by definition, has to be separate from other universes. So how can you talk about probability across universes that are fundamentally separate from one another? I don't even think that the concept of probability has any meaning there. So I think the multiverse theory, as an explanation of fine-tuning, is completely untenable. I think it's nonsense. Whether there are other universes or not, I don't know, nor does anyone else. But multiverses don't explain fine-tuning. So Goff realizes that.
It really does seem like the Boltzmann brain idea that you were thinking about doesn't foster a scientific mindset or scientific inquiry.
Precisely. And that is one of the most profound difficulties, I think, that materialists face. They don't admit it very often. But if you really think that the universe is just the result of chance and that there's no mind that created the universe, that it becomes hard to even do science because you can't even, if everything happened just by chance, it's much more likely that we are, again, just some floating brain in a void without this whole complex universe around us. So even science itself becomes impossible. So I think materialism, I don't even think of materialism actually as a viable metaphysical theory. I think it's just a mistake. Whereas there are other metaphysical theories, for example, Goff's theory of agents of cosmopsychism. It's a valid metaphysical theory. I think it has weaknesses, and I think he's wrong because of the Thomistic proof and because of the prime mover argument. But materialism doesn't even rise to that point. To use the old expression, materialism isn't even wrong. It's just a mistake. So, but I give Goff credit for asking the tough questions and for realizing that the multiverse theory is not a tenable explanation for fine-tuning. But I don't think that agent of cosmopsychism is a viable explanation either, because I don't think the universe can be said to have a mind of its own. And I don't think the universe itself can be the ground of existence. There needs to be a greater power beyond the universe to explain the existence of the universe. I think you can arrive at that conclusion by reasoning it out, as St. Thomas has, as Aristotle did, as many philosophers have.
Well, I like your phrase that, you know, materialism isn't even a viable theory. It's a mistake. And it seems like the fine-tuning parameters do really raise some questions that are interesting to see as they're discussed. So thank you so much for coming on the show today. This has been a fascinating discussion of a very complex topic.
And thank you, Sarah. And it's been wonderful to speak with you.
This has been Sarah Chaffee for ID the Future. Thank you for listening.
This program was recorded by Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. ID the Future is copyright Discovery Institute. For more information, visit intelligentdesign.org and idthefuture.com.